All right, we'll kind of do a postmortem on the 2021 Mets season with Keith Hernandez on this episode of the Shanning Podcast. But more importantly, we're going to kind of go through his time with Jerry Seinfeld in the booth last night. It's going to be good. It all starts right now. All right, everybody, welcome to the Shanning Podcast. It's Doug Williams and Keith Hernandez with you on this Thursday afternoon. A reminder to subscribe to the Shanning Podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening. We appreciate it. And Shanning is brought to you by Verizon. It's 5G built right for the Mets from the network more people rely on, only on Verizon. And another reminder, 6 o'clock, weeknights, baseball night in New York on SNY. Check us out. We have a good time. It's basically this podcast, but in video form. Keith, we know the season's almost over. We know that it's been a grind to get here. But, you know, Jerry on the precipice of, you know, the show being on Netflix, which I'm very excited for, and which I learned last night, which we'll get to in a second, the show also going to Comedy Central, which you were right, very involved in. Let's listen to some of the highlights of Jerry's time in the booth. And we'll start with maybe, you know, some extra quality to the video that we'll be able to see you in on Netflix.
Netflix is releasing all 180 episodes of Seinfeld this Friday, October 1st. Seinfeld will be available in 190 countries. That's 180 episodes, 190 countries.
And 200 million subscribers.
Episodes will be in 4K.
4K.
This is Jerry.
That's going to make a huge difference, isn't it, Keith? Wait till they see Hernandez's mustache in 4K.
Right. I'm guessing you're a Netflix subscriber?
Yes.
So is it going to be the added convenience of being able to watch the show on Netflix? Do you think you'll check out some of the old episodes that you're in?
No, I'll probably check out some of the other episodes that I've never watched. I've put on some serious pounds, so I've got to go on a diet, which means I can't go out and have restaurant food with all that butter and the temptation of maybe one, two, or three glasses of wine. So I've got to go on I've got to lose 15 pounds, and I'm bound and determined to do it because I don't like what I see right now.
So, but what does you losing 15 pounds have to do with you watching the episodes that you're in?
I'll be home, so I'll binge.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So you're
I got a lot of shows lined up that I'm going to watch this winter.
So the best way for you to avoid putting on the pounds is staying home as opposed to going out and eating restaurants.
And binge watching shows.
Okay. Interesting. That's like the opposite for me. If I'm outside the house, not binge watching shows on my couch, I have a tendency to not put on the pounds.
There's one show that went back on. Everything got shut down because of COVID. And one production came back. It's BritBox is the company that you can get. It's all British production. So it's called Line of Duty. And it's about an internals affairs unit in England. And it's fabulous. And they got new episodes up. So that's one. That'll be number one.
All right. Jerry also has clearly been watching the SNY digital clips of the big calls and the big moments in the video of the booth when those happen. Jerry is fascinated by the dynamic and the difference between what you do in those situations and what Gary does in those situations. Right. So let's listen to it.
Michael Conforto's assist at the plate. Remember that moment?
That's right.
Remember, Gary, you stood up and you threw your pen down? Everybody loves when Gary throws the pen down. And for some reason, Keith is writing. Well, the most exciting play of the year.
I was on my scorecard.
Keith, life is not on the scorecard. It's on the field.
I like how you don't get sucked into the big moments. The most important thing to you in those big moments is to write down the play exactly as you see it, correct?
Or collect my thoughts on a comment. Gary has to be in the moment. And that was an exciting play. And it was a bad optic. It was a bad visual. You know, it looks like I don't care or I'm upset. And when I saw the picture, I kind of cringed. And but I was writing on the scorecard and thinking, when I was also my monitor's right in front of me too, so I'm watching and I saw, and it's just getting ready to make a comment about it.
That's so. I don't think it's a bad optic at all, actually, and maybe that's because, you know, I'm, you know, closer to you guys and have listened and seen you work a little, you know, I've been on the same IFB listening to you guys do your job in the booth, and your job is to watch the monitor to make sure that you have the play right. And maybe there's a replay so you can make an intelligent comment after Gary's done with his call, because Gary will eventually make his call and lay out. Then it's your job to call the play as you see it or you saw it. And I think it's part of the Gary, Keith, and Ron dynamic. Every time we see those videos, Ronnie's kind of involved, maybe even like touching Gary's arm or like some sort of nonverbal communication. And you're making sure that you write down the scorecard and you look at the monitor. I think it's part of why those videos are so great and do so well on social media. Another thing too
is, you know, camera two is right at the camera where Al is, right below us. And if I'm watching from the booth, I'm watching from a distance. So if I walk at the monitor, our cameramen are so good, and our director, John DeMarsico, is so good that the monitor does a close up and I get a better view of the tag as the play unfolds. So as opposed to if I was watching from above, I can't see, my eyes aren't what they used to. I mean, I could see, but you know, I don't have the advantage of having a close up, which, right, you know, the cameras provide, all the cameras that we have in our production team.
Last one from Jerry's time in the booth, which was actually my favorite moment. I referenced Comedy Central earlier. Here's why.
You know, I did a spot promoting the fact that your show.
No,
well, Comedy Central is going to take it too.
Yes,
I did something for Comedy Central. I did a tape promoting Seinfeld.
Well, thank you, Keith. Did you do that gratis?
I didn't.
No.
So you were like, you wanted to say, yeah, you know, anything for Jerry. But at the end of the day, there was a little stipend there. Maybe.
No one works for free.
If you're good at something, Keith, never do it for free.
So they had a bunch of people back there that were doing a bunch of vignettes promoting Comedy Central with past characters. So it should be very interesting when that hits the tube.
Yep. I am looking forward to, just like you, the only difference is I wasn't in Seinfeld, but watching the episodes I haven't seen, because I've probably seen half over the course of my lifetime, but I haven't binged it like I have The Office or like any other show, because it hasn't been as easy. And now that it's going to be easy for people like myself, I think it's going to be a thing in pop culture again, because we all have the ability to watch it in each episode in succession, as opposed to, you know, you're flipping through the channels on cable and you see that Seinfeld's on, you stop. This will be great. You'll be able to see which season was your favorite. And I actually rewatched recently the Seinfeld reunion season of Curb, which in my opinion is the funniest season of television I think I've ever seen, because they bring everybody back, you know, Jason's in it and Jerry, like everybody from the cast is there, and it's just phenomenal television. So I recommend it to anybody who's done the same thing with Curb and hasn't really fully binged it properly. Do that, because if you're a Seinfeld fan, that'll be a treat for you. So Jeff listed out a multiple choice question for you, Keith, as we talk a little bit of Mets on this episode of this Shay Anything Mets podcast. Let's see. What was the best part of the season for you? Was it A, the Conforto and Baez walk-off? B, Lindor's 3-home run game against the Yankees? C, calling the games from the media dining room? D, doing this podcast? Or E, other?
Well, we didn't do the 3-home run game. That was network, I believe. So I did not broadcast that game. God, that's a toughie. I have to put other. Here's other. Nothing. Dude, really the best, rings the bell.
The best nothing, part nothing, is...
nothing excites me at all for AB.
It would be one thing. It would be one thing if you were saying other and you had something top of mind that was actually other, but you're just pleading the fifth. You're just saying like other. Jeff, Jeff is incensed by something, I can tell.
Oh, good. The easy answer was D, doing the podcast.
No, it's okay. Look, Keith gave us his honest answer, which is that he didn't particularly enjoy any of those things. Right. So
tell you what I did enjoy, but we only got a half a season of it, is just about every game DeGrom threw.
That's a good one.
That would be the other.
Yep, there's your other. Took you a couple minutes to think of it, but it's there. DeGrom's incredible season that was cut short, which it's going to be interesting to see if we look back and define 2021 in this Mets team as the year that they lost DeGrom, because, you know, they were in first place. DeGrom gets hurt and they plummeted. And I think that that's no coincidence. I mean, look, they had a lot of guys not exactly perform the way they should have in the lineup, but losing a guy like DeGrom, I imagine, is just a huge mental blow for a team. Losing your North Star, the guy who leads you in the right direction, can't be easy. Once again, you're listening to the Shane Inning Podcast. It's brought to you by Verizon. It's 5G built right for the Mets from the network more people rely on, only on Verizon. What do you think of seeing Noah Syndergaard pitch, Keith? How important did you think that was for him? And you know, just generally for the decision they have to make this offseason?
Well, I think it was good to run him out there. I mean, Ronnie could probably speak to that better than me. It's got to feel good that he went out there. What I liked about the start, well, the inning, was that he threw strikes. So he threw 10 pitches, 6 fastballs, 4 changeups. He said he wasn't going to throw his slider, so he was told by the medical staff not to do that. So much for all this talk about more stress on the arm throwing the fastball than the slider. Well, if that was the case, then he wouldn't have thrown the fastball. I thought that was kind of a paradox there a little. But anyway, his changeup was great. And he didn't have the velocity in his fastball, and he threw mainly sinkers. You know, he had a little sink. He didn't throw the four-seamer, which means he just didn't want to unload, and he shouldn't. He was told to, you know, to go 75-80%. It's his first time he's been on the mound in a while. So I thought it was very positive. And I see in the paper today that he's going to pitch in Atlanta. So great.
Yeah, it sounds like Friday or Saturday for him. We keep talking over the fact that, you know, it's really, or I do at least, it's really a great thing to see him back on the mound again. I mean, 2 years is a long time to be getting over a serious injury and a serious surgery. And, you know, it's just a great accomplishment to be back on the mound. And so you could tell in his post-game comments how much it meant to him to pitch again, to be on the Citi Field mound. He was also honest about the fact that he wants to remain a Met, that he thinks that his side and the Mets are going to be able to come to an agreement. Now, whether or not that was a good strategy is interesting to think about, because a lot of times players will be coy. Their agents will say, you know, don't give away what you want to do. Don't say, yeah, I want to be a Met. Say, you know, we'll see. And Syndergaard, basically, I think the strategy was putting pressure, public pressure on the Mets, saying, I want to be here. It's up to them to sign me. So, Keith, they have a choice to make. They can offer him a qualifying offer and pay him a lot of money, like $20 million.
Can you imagine that? Would you like that? Would you take that?
I would take that. I think to do this podcast twice a week and do Baseball Night in New York 5 times a week.
If I got $20 million, I wouldn't be doing this podcast.
Well, what would you be making $20 million for? This would be part of the deal, Keith.
I understand.
Second part of the show where Keith has basically admitted he doesn't enjoy doing this. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. What about $20 million for Noah Syndergaard? Do you think realistically he is worth, given all the question marks, that high of a price tag for one season?
Well, that's the rules. And, you know, you don't know what the Mets are going to do. Walker, although he had a very good start last night, had an abysmal second half. Our starting pitching was short. I think that the Mets are going to have to bring Syndergaard back. I'm going to give him a qualifying offer, and I hope he takes it. And, you know, it's $20 million. You'll be negotiating from $20 million after one season. You know, it's not like that's your base. You're going from there. So if you go out and pitch well, I mean, you can be a 500 pitcher and you're going to get a $5 million raise, you know, maybe an $8 million raise. Because wins,
yeah, I mean,
wins don't mean anything anymore, right?
As we know, Keith, you know, when, because we start at 20 million. So it makes our next negotiation a little easier. You know, it's like maybe I don't have to do the podcast and maybe get a little bit of a raise from 20 to 24 million next year. Right. That's up to our agent. But so the one thing though is if you don't think he's worth 20 million and there's too many risks, you cannot give him a qualifying offer. Make sure that, you know, if he's serious and he wants to be a Met, then he'll still sign with you on the open market. Maybe they offer him $10 million with some incentives. If he throws 150 innings, he gets $5 million more. If he throws 200 innings, he gets $3 million more than that. Would you take that risk? You know, couldn't you do that?
You could certainly do that. I don't have a feel for what Noah wants, whether he was, when he said he wants to stay. I mean, like you said, that was something, if he meant it, that's something he probably shouldn't have said from a negotiating point of view. You want to, he wouldn't be a good poker player, you know, that would not be something you would do at the table there if you're not holding a strong hand. So I think he's got to come back because you just don't know about DeGrom. He's going to be a year older. You know, how is he going to hold up? To me, the big question is Stroman. You know, yeah. What are they going to do with Stroman? He's another guy that's a free agent. And that makes things for Conforto if they're going to stick to pitching. And then that makes things a little dicier for Conforto.
The one thought that I had was, yes, it may not be the smartest negotiating ploy by Syndergaard, but he also might be, because he knows how popular he is on social media, maybe what he's doing is putting public pressure on the Mets. You know, if Mets fans know that Syndergaard wants to come back and suddenly the Mets don't offer him a qualifying offer, then people are going to be angry and tweeting at Steve Cohen saying, what are you thinking? Why aren't you bringing Syndergaard back? We love him.
Well, let's just hope that the Mets, number one, have to hire a front office and, a new general manager, and let's just hope that this general manager, the front office, is not going to be swayed or ruled by public opinion and outcry, that they'll make solid baseball decisions and come what may, whatever criticisms they get. So we'll see what they do.
I will say,
you know me, I always want pitching. I always want pitching.
Jeff makes a good point that if you do pay him $20 million, he may have an innings cap coming. You know, it's his first full season coming off of Tommy John surgery. He may start the season as a reliever. So then you're paying $20 million.
I don't think he'll start as a reliever.
Yeah, he may not. I mean,
I think he'll start with five innings. You know, if there's an issue that they're concerned about, they won't let him go long. In the beginning, they'll still gradually, but he's got all winter to prepare now. You know, he's got all winter to get ready, and he's a workaholic. We know one thing, he'll come ready to play.
And you know, he's obsessed with his health. I mean, he's had trouble staying healthy, but he's drinking that bone broth. You know?
Look at Loop. Loop said he missed the game. He had a different opinion, a bit different outlook on the game. You know, he's been away for a year, and he wants to get back in the scrum. He wants to play.
Yeah, I think it makes the decision trickier, though, for the Mets. If you're unsure, if you picture yourself letting him go 200 innings, then yeah, sure, give him $20 million. But if you think to yourselves, okay, our performance staff will want him capped at 150, and why would we pay somebody $20 million to cap him? Then I understand it. Take your chance on the open market, give them some incentives. I think that's probably the smart business decision. Just like the smart business decision with Lindor was to let him remain a free agent and, you know, use his motivation to your benefit and revisit it. But public outcry would have been tough to handle. And sometimes those things creep into decision-making when they probably shouldn't, even if it feels like they should.
They're going to have to get someone, a general manager, quickly.
Yes.
To be the head. And there's decisions to be made, big decisions. This is the first full year with Mr. Cohn seeing the ball club. We don't know what his reaction is, what he's telling them, what he doesn't like, what he does like. They have to get someone that's going to be going to make the decisions on personnel to build and to make this new team for next year, the new roster. It's got to be the first priority and get after it.
Do you see Sandy said yesterday that they plan on making a decision on Rojas and the coaching staff before they hire that president of baseball operations? I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, they'll make a decision one way or the other real quickly. I think it's only fair. I mean, I don't know what this, their choice is going to be. Are they going to get rid of the whole crew? Are they going to keep the whole crew? Are they going to keep this person and that, or get rid of that person? But it's only fair if you're going to unload people that you give them a chance to go out all winter and try to get a new job somewhere else in a new organization. So it's only fair to do that.
Let's do a three batter rule before we go. Just three bounce back candidates, Keith, going into next season. Three guys that, you know, if the Mets retain not Lindor, but McNeil and Dom Smith. So those are our three guys. They're going to need more out of them, certainly. So let's start with Lindor. Did you see enough in the second half of the year to think that going into next year, you know who he is, he'll be fine?
His September has been outstanding. They've been basically meaningless games. I think he's had a chance to relax. And he had a big contract, new fan base, tough fan base. But I also think that, you know, after all that thumbs down baloney happened, you saw the Yankees go tank a little bit, and their Giancarlo Stanton and Judge get booed. And don't think they don't read the papers and they see that this is not just a Met thing. It is New York. Fans are tough. They'll let you know. So I think Lindor has played better because the pressure's off right now. They're not playing for anything, and he's relaxed. I can see him much more relaxed in the field. So I look for him to come back and feel more acclimated, be more acclimated. And I think we'll see how he does. We don't know. I think he'll be much more relaxed next year. The first year is tough. Make a lot of money, a lot of pressure. You know, he didn't have a good year. He's going to hit 220-something. It's not good. So he needs to get away. He takes 6 months off, get away, get himself prepared, and come back next year. He hit 8 home runs in September. Driven over 20 runs. He's had a good September. A little too late, or too much too late, but nonetheless, it's a building block. It's much like Edwin Diaz. I mean, Edwin Diaz, you know, he's going to save 30 games. I really don't, that disastrous first year here, he was basically the same thing. And I really think that Diaz would have struggled. It wasn't for the COVID year with no fans. It would have been more difficult transition. I think it helped him not having any fans. And now he's completely acclimated. And he's had his ups and downs. But I think all in all, he's had a good year. So I look for the same thing to happen with Lindor.
Mm. All right. So speaking of the opposite of relaxed, Jeff McNeil. Mm-hmm. This whole year, it seems like he's just clenching the bat, very frustrated, doesn't seem to be himself. Do you consider dealing him this offseason, or do you rely on a potential comeback season next year out of him?
Well, you don't know. That's the unknown. I mean, Jeff got into that big uppercut swing. And he's talked about how he's missed his pitches, but he's, you know, he's swinging so up, it's just hard to square the ball up with that kind of swing. And there's mental factors too. You're not hitting, you're hitting 240, 250. And you lose confidence? Do you press? I mean, we're going to have probably a DH next year if they have a new basic agreement. So the other person you want to talk about is Dom. So if that's the case, then, you know, Dom can go to first base and Pete becomes your DH. So that helps Dom as far as Dom's status is staying. But both those guys, Dom and McNeil, had not good years, disappointing years, very disappointing.
Let's be honest.
I mean, I like them both, but you know, I can't sit here and, you know, throw the bull around. They had disappointing years.
Yeah, they underperformed. I mean, but it's not just them. Conforto underperformed, McCann underperformed, Lindor underperformed. And again, to my question earlier, I wonder if we're going to look at this year as the year that got away with DeGrom getting hurt, or the year that, you know, this young core was exposed as being not what it was kind of hyped up to be.
Well, it's the great unknown. You're right. It's the great unknown. You just don't know. You're only as good as your last season. Okay, you're only as good as your last game. And when you start evaluating, okay, I was at one point where I had my breakout year in 77. I hit 291, I hit 15 home runs, drove in 91 runs. Then 1978, I hit 255. And I hit 218 in the second half of the season. Don't ask me why. And then I go into 79, and it's a big question mark. Well, the Cardinals had to go, well, which one's Keith? The 77 or the 78? And I wind up being, you know, the MVP and the batting champ. It's the great unknown. And I think that both Dom and McNeil are in that position right now that I was in when I was younger. Hmm.
So that would lead you to think that betting on them, bringing them back, believing in them is the right strategy?
Mm-hmm. It's not my decision. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't like what I saw in their regression this year, in their swings, particularly McNeil's swing. I did not like what I saw all year long. And I just think that there's too much emphasis on OPS and too many guys trying to hit home runs. And I think they get in bad habits. And look at the league now at 250. It's going to be the average, one of the low averages ever, because so much emphasis on OPS. No one talks about the batting title race. I mean, you got a great batting title race in both leagues. You know, Soto and Trey Turner right now. And over there, it's Gurriel and his teammate, Brantley, battling it out. No one cares. That's important. Batting title's big. It's just no emphasis on it. You don't hear anybody talking about it.
Yeah. I think just back to Dom quickly as our third guy, you were talking to Jerry about this last night, because Jerry was talking about, you know, Pete Alonso and how much he's enjoyed watching him kind of improve defensively at first, and how, you know, you both don't like the DH, but you view Dom Smith as the everyday first baseman moving forward. And I tend to agree. I think of the two, of Dom and McNeil, the more sure thing of two question marks is Dom. Give him a shot at first base every day, his natural position. Hope that he bounces back. Maybe he's somewhere in between, to the point about that you made about you. Who is Keith? Who is Dom? Is he the shortened season 2020 guy? Is he the struggling left fielder in 2021? I think he's probably somewhere in between. But if you can imagine Keith being as good defensively at first base as he is, as you were, suddenly you're a left fielder every day. Maybe giving him some normalcy next year could help.
I would be inclined to agree. I thought Dom handled it well, you know, but, you know, it's hard to evaluate players on a 60-game schedule, which was, you know, the pandemic year 2 years ago. And now we've had a full season. It's 162. It's not 60. There's 100 games they didn't play. And water seeks its level. Cream comes to the top. And you are what you are. And that's why everybody says the season's too long. I disagree. That's the beauty of baseball. But it's a long haul. And the real players are the ones that come up on top. So we'll see.
Reminder, subscribe to the Shane Inning podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening. We appreciate it. And Shane Inning is brought to you by Verizon. It's 5G built right for the Mets from the network. More people rely on only on Verizon. Keith, enjoy the last few games of the season. Thanks as always for doing this, even though it wasn't on your multiple choice highlights of the season. But we appreciate having you. Our listeners do too. So thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes, I'll be available all winter. I'm down in Florida. I'm at Jeff's beck and call.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.